Now we are live.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, everyone. I've called this Lane Transit District Board Director Special Meeting to order. I want to thank all LTD board members, staff, and the public for joining us in this remote format, which we're using to comply with Governor Kate Brown's Stay Home, Save Lives order. These remote meetings allow the LTD board to meet its obligations while keeping all those involved as safe as possible. For these weekly special meetings, we are focused on staying informed about how COVID-19 is affecting transit operations and our community, as well as giving direction during this unprecedented and fluid situation. So first, let's get to a roll call. So I believe Kate Reed is here, Josh Gove is here, Caitlin Vargas is here. Is Stephen, are you there?
I'm here.
Excellent. Just making sure your tech works. And was Emily here? I didn't see her name, but just checking. Okay. So
I don't believe
here.
So, not just yet.
Oh, thank you very much for that. And then Don Norton already let us know that he is not able to make it. He's actually attending the Lane Act meeting instead. So we're going to go ahead and proceed without him. So I was going to just a quick comment that there is a handout that you could have downloaded. That puts in writing how to add additions to the agenda. We'll talk more about that when we get to that agenda item. And then I'd like to turn it over to AJ as general manager. Do you have any comments that you'd like to make?
I do not, Carl. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you very much, AJ. So now we're at the announcements and additions to the agenda. I just wanted to check with everyone to see if there were any questions or discussion about the handout.
I appreciate it, Carl, and I think it's fairly self-explanatory. I think the only suggestion I would make is that we maybe have like a regular agenda item to have a little bit of discussion about what's coming on future agendas, just because there's been so much churn. That would be my suggestion.
Okay. Well, certainly we could do that at the end of each meeting if there is a suggestion for an agenda item in the future. But we'll kind of see how it goes, and we'll figure it out as time goes on. Okay, great. Well, with that, we're going to go ahead straight into the
I'm not getting any audio for Carl. Carl, are you still there? Camille, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Josh.
Hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. I think Carl just lost his audio for a second. We'll give him a second to try to get it back.
He looks frozen. There we go. You're moving again, Carl.
Carl, use sign language, please.
Hello?
Now we can hear you. Carl, would you like me to just start the next agenda item? Just nod while you start the.
Hi, is this working?
Yes.
There we go.
How much did anything I say come out?
No.
No, okay, I'm so sorry. For some reason, where did I last leave off?
You were just starting to move to the first agenda item.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I don't know what happened. It must have been a technical glitch on my side. So we're going to go ahead and move to the first agenda item regarding the responses to the questions posed by Best. I want to hand it over to AJ.
So, am I on? Okay, making sure I'm not muted. Sorry, or else I'll do the same. You guys can hear me, correct? We provided the information that was requested by the board, and this agenda item is being provided to see if the board has any additional questions, like clarifying information on this agenda item. We'd be happy if we have the answers tonight to answer them or respond in writing back to the board and post it or bring back the items at the next scheduled meeting. What would be the, so Carl, whichever way you guys want to handle this is
fine. Yeah, I mean, my impression was that there was some interest in debriefing some of the answers, but and I have a comment I'd like to make, but I'm going to hold on to it and see what other people want to say first. So go ahead and raise your hand, either with the raise your hand button or just, oh, I see Josh. Okay, so go ahead, Josh.
Sorry, I was double muted there for a sec. Okay, thank you, Carl. Well, I have a handful of questions. I'll just start with one and maybe we can, I don't know, go around as people have things to bring up. And first of all, let me just say thank you to staff for putting this together. This is really helpful. And I think this is the level of deliberation we should have on every budget. On question number two, there was the best memo was asking about point to point, but actually I had more of an extension of that question that was really, since we have made such a dramatic cut in point to point staff, essentially all staff, I think under Teresa, I would like some expectation, and maybe this was in the budget and I couldn't find it, but if you could set some sort of expectation about how we will serve the functions that point-to-point was previously serving. So surely we're not giving up on all kind of transportation options work. Are we going to do it in other departments? Are we going to do it with other staff? Are we going to do it with partnerships? Or maybe we are just cutting the activities and hoping for the best. So I wanted to get kind of a clarification on more the sort of the purpose behind that expenditure. That's all I've got for now.
Carl, if you would like me to move through the pages of the response document, just let me know. And also for the record, Emily joined at 5:36.
Oh, great. Welcome, Emily. You know, that wouldn't be bad if you would go ahead and turn to page 5 of the packet, then we can put it on question number 2. Thank you very much, Camille. AJ, would you be the best person to give that answer?
Yes. What will happen with the point, we have point-to-point has a large portion of that fund is grant funded, and those grants have deliverables about, you know, reducing single car travel and a lot of different deliverables. At this point, what we are doing is we're regrouping, and given the COVID-19 situation and the fact that a lot of those activities that were traditionally done, like for safe routes to schools, face-to-face or in events or different forums that required a lot of in-person interaction and staff time, given that we no longer have that as our primary communication, we are reassessing how do we meet those goals in this, I don't know if we're yet post-COVID, but at some point we will be in a post-COVID environment. I would say that our goal is to continue moving forward with those programs and whether, but we have to reassess how they would be completed. So I will say the portion of the general fund that matches that, we're recommending to the board that the board continue to fund that match for those grants and that we maintain a commitment that those goals are still goals that we want as a entity to support. And that given that the funding is provided to allow us to come back and bring you how those would be accomplished. I know that there's conversations regionally happening. We have other partners like Elkhart cities, the local cities, and other interested stakeholders that would also like to have a say about how they help inform how those programs move forward in this, again, we call it post-COVID world in which that staff time cannot be spent in the way it used to be spent. But there's definitely new opportunities on how we can still meet those regional goals without doing that. So we don't have the specific answer. That's the work that's being done right now by Teresa and a couple of the staff. And part of the planning team is also working on that to reimagine all of that. And I suspect over the next several weeks, I don't think in the next couple of weeks, but because I do know that they're scheduling meetings, they will come back and tell us like what it will look like. So we don't have all those definite answers, I will say. And but we know that what we were doing in the past, we just cannot continue doing with that in that way. I think that was kind of the one of the early on conversations that we acknowledged, that some of the activities that we did, those tasks have gone away. And because of that, the staffing has gone away as well, because those individuals can no longer perform them in the way they used to perform them.
Thanks, AJ. You know, I'll go ahead and interject my comment now, because I'm glad Josh asked that question, because I found, thank you to you and your staff for making all these answers. I found them all satisfactory. I thought actually I had the same question that Josh essentially had for question number two, and I think you did a good job of explaining that situation. Because, you know, given the circumstances, I do think we need to reimagine how point-to-point, the spirit of that is fulfilled. I do think the fact that Best asked the question, I think, and I would imagine many of us on the board probably do support the idea of that function. So hopefully with your reimagination that you'll figure out a way to carry those forward in a safe way. Were there other people who'd like to make a comment or ask a question? Okay, seeing none, I'm gonna go ahead and say thank you very much, AJ, for taking time to do all that and to the rest of the staff. Oh, Josh, go ahead. I think you're double muted, just.
Sorry, thank you. Sorry about that. I was waiting for other people to fill the void. I do have one other question / comment. This is a quick one. I just want to clarify on number 10. There's this question about revenue vehicles, and the clarification is fine, but I just want to sort of get the juices flowing in people's minds to reconsider one piece of this. The final sentence is, future bus purchases will be evaluated throughout FY 2021 as part of our community investment plan. I just want to remind everyone that we're actually, you know, with that Kelly Hale is working on a parallel set of goals that relate to greenhouse gas emissions reduction and fleet, and we're going to be considering, you know, climate goals in our next meeting. So I would say that we shouldn't actually expect our community investment plan to drive fleet in the way that it has in the past. I mean, we're going to have to reconsider that once we have the climate goals in hand. So just to, I think sometimes we're always sort of responsibly referring back to adopted documents, but that one will have to change once we have new information. That's all.
Great. Thank you very much, Josh. Thanks again, AJ. And we'll go ahead and move on to Tom with the ridership and operations update.
Thank you. And I'm going to share my screen now, if that works for you, Camille.
Go right ahead, Tom.
All right. Here we go. Start at the beginning. All right, so this is an update for data through yesterday and back to May 11th. So again, we're looking at about a month rolling window here. And you can see on the chart in the upper left, sorry, I'm moving this header thing around here. You can really see the effects of the protest, and really not so much the protest directly as much as the curfews that we shut our service down early on these days. And You can see then that in the, what would be the bottom left, to the total boardings by day, pretty steady, a little down the past couple days. But again, it's, you can't draw a lot of conclusions from a couple days of data. One thing to point out, we began a new level of service or new bid on Sunday. And so you see Sunday service is brought back here. And I expect that'll increase by next week. We'll see the Sunday service or the Sunday ridership next Sunday to be a little bit higher just because of the circumstances for this Sunday. Interesting pattern here. We're trying to figure out there's a lot more variation in boardings after 8:30 this last week than there was in the previous weeks. We just want to kind of watch and see what might have been contributing to that, see if that's a pattern that continues. But otherwise, that's the broad overview. Looking at loads, we talked last week about the fact that the beginning of the month tends to generate a little more ridership. We are seeing that it may still be the beginning of the month that's creating this. We saw the 18 having some load, like I guess that's three issues or trips that had loads over 20. We're digging into that, trying to figure out that's the first time the 18 has shown up as an issue. But this kind of information, again, gives us something to really help focus why those overloads are happening, and we'll continue to review that. With respect to 60-foot buses, you know, kind of similar patterns. You know, you saw some of this last week. The overloads on the 60-foot buses, I mean, there's fewer of them, so there's fewer overloads. One interesting thing, not sure why, but yesterday we had the 11, a couple overloads on the 11, but not MX. So again, as the recovery continues and ridership patterns evolve, we may see some of these kinds of things. But again, we continue to watch and see what happens. I wanted to dig a little bit more on the loads and vehicles. So this, you might recall, we had a map similar to this a couple weeks ago. And so this is an update showing the overloads, kind of average number of overloads for the week. And I'm not expecting that you would recall exactly the patterns that you saw in the last chart, but that's, we're seeing very similar overloads. Obviously, the Eugene Station is the dark red here, but you know, you got some MX overloads, but also the 41 in a couple of areas here, and then you know, service on Coburg Road is also seeing some overloads. Again, very similar to patterns that we've seen. One of the things we're working on, we started looking at this for kind of, you might call it the pre-COVID normal. And a lot of these places have similar, I mean, they're similar patterns with respect to overloads, which I guess you might expect. I mean, the people that really use transit on a regular basis are going to show up at similar places, whether it's pre-COVID or COVID. And so we're looking into that a little bit more. And again, we'll come back with any findings that we have in that regard. You might recall we had a 3D chart, which they look cool for some reason, though they don't impart all the information we would hope they would. So we went back to 2D. And this is showing boardings by time of day, What you can see here, and you might recall the chart we had a couple times, that this this is the original kind of, again, pre-COVID normal that we were seeing back at the beginning of March. The week after that, the students had started to leave, and so you saw a different pattern. Again, I put this red line in here just so you could clearly see the peak during that time was just a little after 3 p.m. As time has progressed, you know, you can see the ridership going down, and this this front thing here is the current last week, and you can see that last week is starting to cover up the previous week. So we did a bar chart to the right, so you can actually follow. You know, think about turning the graphic on the left sideways and kind of looking at the different slices. And you can see what's going on here is, you know, the ridership is falling. And then this is all the various periods, and we made several adjustments to our service. But the recovery happened in kind of around this period. So we started to see an uptick in our ridership. Generally speaking, it went from, again, this low was close to 8,000, 8,500, and now we're up closer to 11,000. But that gives you kind of the pattern of change that we've seen. And this is a result, these last few slices here, if you will, the last few bars reflect both a combination of the reopening and the changes in service that we've made. So we went from a Sunday to a modified Sunday. So it's just a little more service that we saw, and then we've been operating that same level of service 6 days a week, and we'll have the first week of Sunday service back for you next week. One of the interesting things that we wanted to show you, and Andrew created this chart using a program called R, and so the graphic is not a graphic program like Excel has in it. And so this looks kind of more like an oldie-timey kind of computer graphic. But this is showing you the number of buses at by time of day. And you can see we put a lot more buses out during these peak periods than other parts of the day. And we've got the morning peak here, and the evening peak here is a little bit higher. And this is for the winter bit. So this would have been starting in early February. And again, before we made all the changes. And this just shows you really what peak, you know, we're adding several buses just to manage the peak, you know, close to, you know, if you look at about 60 buses here and about 80 buses up here. So, you know, we're adding 15 to 20 buses to handle the peak loads. And then they're, you know, once that peak is over, they're taken off and then they're put back on. So it's just a really good illustration of what a sharp peak in our demand does to our fleet operations. The summer bid, that's really the line showing the service that we're operating now. And so these are the vehicles that we're putting out over time. And what's interesting is that you can see there's less of a curve. This has to do with the fact that really the level of service we're putting out is what we would typically put out on Sundays, again, with adding a little service on in the mornings and evenings. And you've not got the peaks on the weekend that you see during the weekdays. And if you go back here, to look at that, this is our weekday, you know, this is weekday data. So you can see our curves have really, the peaks have really flattened out here, which really matches well with the level of service that we're adding. So just thought that would be of interest for you to visualize. Moving on.
Hey Tom, quick question. Yeah, what does BID stand for, or what does BID mean?
BID is literally the term that's used for the process that operations goes through to have drivers basically bid on the service, the chunk of service that they want to operate, and it's done by seniority. So senior, you know, the more senior drivers get, the better pieces of work. And we we're required to do 3 bids a year, and we're probably going to do more this year just because of the conditions. But yeah, that's what bid means. Thanks for that question. Wanted to just give you a sense of, because we talk about weekday service and Saturday service and Sunday service, but wanted to show you a couple of things in terms of just comparing some of the daily revenue hours that we operate. And that daily revenue is in service and in layovers. And you can see in the fall and winter of, let's just say this fiscal year. So this is February of 2020, and this would be September of 2019, operating about 960 hours per day during the week. Saturdays, 536 hours per day, and Sundays, 376. When we went through the bid on April 27th, you can see we... And we had reduced from the 960. You saw the ridership. We basically matched our service to the level of service that we needed. But you can see that represents about half, less than half of the service we were operating during each weekday during normal times. We're operating basically the same level of service 6 days a week. And while that 455 hours is less than we were operating on Saturdays during normal times, it's still about 85% of what we're operating then. And then 376 hours on Sunday, we haven't changed that at all. There's, you know, that's about the lowest level of service that we think is viable there. So just to give you rough percentages, but in normal times, Saturdays would be about close to 60% of weekday service. And then Sundays, you can see, are 40%. So that just gives you some comparisons and a framework to think about when you hear us talking about levels of service. Let's see, what else do I have?
Hey, Tom, yeah, go ahead. Really quickly, just to clarify, document says revenue hours, but we're actually still not collecting any fares. Is that correct?
I didn't hear your question. Say the last part.
Yeah, we're still not collecting fares. That was the question.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And probably won't be until after the end of July, once we get the bus operator barriers in place.
Thanks, Mark.
Yeah.
So just real quick on RightSource. Call volumes, very similar patterns over the past couple of weeks. We were seeing a slight uptick in call volumes, but I think, I mean, we'll have to say that's only a couple of days of data, so we'll see if that changes at all. But that looks very similar than trips, also very similar patterns. And at least from this vantage point, there aren't a lot of shifts in that service at this point in time. So to wrap up, just to talk a little bit about, you know, as we are watching what's going on and thinking about what the transit market is and how it's going to change, and looking at COVID cases, we were looking at, as you know, the Portland and Salem areas have had a lot more COVID cases, but we wanted to look at this and just see kind of how Lane compares. And as you can see, so we looked at, first of all, here's just a general population density per square mile. So, you know, even though Eugene Springfield area is the second largest region after Portland, very similar to Salem, actually. Given the size of our county and the smaller size that Multnomah County is and the larger population, you can see there's really significant differences in the population densities. You can see the population here in the table. So we're looking at active cases per 1,000 population. And again, very different situation for Lane County relative to the Portland-Salem area. And that's, as we continue to proceed through phase two of recovery and looking out at what it's going to take to enter phase three, you can see we are in a much different situation. And of course, I know Lane County is watching as we go through these phases to see what happens with respect to active cases. But we, as the table indicates here, Lane only has 9 active cases currently compared to 745 for Multnomah. So just wanted to show you that kind of scale of difference there. And this is a map that shows you kind of the same kind of thing in a map form by county. And so just another way to look at that. Finally, just a couple of photos that we've come across. This is the Hawthorne Bridge in Portland during peak period, during shutdown. So it's just a really stark image of how different it would look, because that's one of the busier bridges. This is, you might say, what's this got to do with transportation? But this, if you're familiar with this statue, it's in Bend. It's called the Traveler. We found this as we were just looking across things. We came across this. And of course, he's appropriately COVID prepared, but still looking at an empty wallet. So with that, that's my presentation. Would entertain any questions you have.
Thank you so much, Tom. Thank you, Vex, for that context around the counties and the COVID-19 infection too. I think that helps a lot. Checking in with everyone, were there any questions or comments that people would like to make? I was going to make one. When we were talking, since it was brought up about revenue hours, Tom, when we do start charging fares again, the board can certainly talk about it and give you feedback, but just from me personally, it'd be great if we could give the public as much notice as possible before doing that, because I just know people are creatures of habit and they get used to not paying a fare. I just don't want to leave anyone out there who didn't bring the fare with them and then not be able to get to where they need to go.
Sure. And I don't know if Mark, you want to comment on that as well?
No, other than, we'll make sure that everyone knows that we're going to be starting to collect fare again. And you know, we're pretty liberal in our fare enforcement anyway. So we don't typically just leave people on the street if they don't have a fare. So,
yeah. No, and I know you guys would make sure to try to. I just thought it was worth mentioning to do as much notice as possible. Any other questions or comments? Okay, if not, thank you very much, everybody.
Sorry, I had my hand up. Sorry. Waiting to see if other people had questions first. Anyone before I go through a couple of them?
No, Josh, you should always go first.
Very funny, Stephen. Thank you. I think I'll take your suggestion in this case. Maybe my questions will inspire some other people here. Thank you, Tom, for all that information. I want to draw people's attention to a couple of things. Let me ask one clarification, and then I have a few comments. Is there any way, Tom or Mark, to take the numbers that you put up there? Because it sounds like you have sort of service hours, or at least revenue hours, per day for a few different kinds of days, and then to say how that tracks to total revenue hours or service hours in a given year. One of the things I asked last time was if we could start to develop some kind of a common language there where we're referring to those things on the same scale, so those of us who are not completely immersed in it on a day-to-day basis can actually get a sense of how close are we to the 140,000 hours that, you know, the annual rate of 140,000 hours that we had sunk to or getting back to the 200,000 mark had said would be, you know, an aspiration for the fall, or the nearly 300,000 that we were on track for in the last, you know, in the current fiscal year before things went off the rails. So if, it'd be great to sort of put it in that context.
Yeah, so, and one of the questions you asked last time was how many additional hours was Sunday add? And it's 375 hours a week. So, you know, we're at about 140,000 hours without that. Adding Sunday adds 375 hours a week. And so, you know, times 52.
Another 20,000 hours.
Yeah.
Roughly.
Yeah. So, yeah, that gets us up to around 160,000 for the year, or for on a yearly basis.
That's helpful. Okay, and I just want to make sure that when we're looking at this stuff that we can kind of, you know, sort of see the same sort of format with those numbers week to week, just so we're not having to do a bunch of math. But that's helpful, Mark. Thank you.
Well, set up something that can help you kind of crosswalk between the annual hours that you guys are looking at for budget and kind of how we think about things in, on a weekly and daily basis. We can come up with something that helps that.
I mean, that would be great. I'm not saying it has to appear weekly, but I think because we have all talked about how this budget is really our best guess and that circumstances could change quite a bit in the coming months, I think we'll kind of want to know, are we on track for what we predicted, or are we, you know, way off it? So I'll leave it to you guys, but that's the function that I would hope for us to serve on that front.
Sure.
Okay, thank you. So just a couple quick comments for people, and I thought you'd find this interesting. So I rode the bus today. I ran some errands on the 24, and so I hadn't actually, just because I'd been at home so much, I hadn't been out and on the bus in a while. There were 11 people plus me on the 24 going from the South Willamette area to downtown. Obviously, everyone had masks. One guy was at a bus stop and didn't get picked up because he had no facial covering. And the bus driver stopped and didn't open the doors, and he didn't procure facial covering, and they kept moving. So I thought you should just know. It might be interesting to see that in action. The other thing I would just say to people, because we all have sort of, you know, personal experiences, and I think we all try to figure out what it means, like personally, but also in a policy sense as we're making decisions here. 11 people on one of our buses is not a heavy load. I think we know that. Lots of our buses are sort of, you know, that's nowhere near the thresholds for the 40-foot buses. But I got to tell you, as an individual who goes out a little bit to like grocery stores and things like that, that felt like the most crowded space that I had been in months. And it was slightly unnerving. So as we think about these thresholds, I guess it made me take those thresholds of 15 or 20 for the 40-foot bus, or 20 or 30 for the 60-foot bus, it made me take those more seriously. Those are really crowded in a COVID world, and I think I had not fully appreciated that until I got out there and actually saw it in action. I don't know, Tom, do you want to comment on that, just because you had the limits up, the sort of the overages?
I can comment on it, but it may be more appropriate to have Mark talk about some of the operational things just to get that out. But yeah, I mean, when we're looking at the data, again, our interest is, well, where are these happening? And that's why the maps that we've been producing try and get at that. That's really data we're using to try to discern where are those overloads happening. Again, I've had the same kinds of experience with respect to being on buses recently, and you realize, even though there's, you know, I want to say I was on one with 15 people, and I mean, there's a lot of people in a relatively small space, but I don't know, at the same time, you know, we are social distancing, and there's things we're looking at that can kind of re-emphasize that, and all the things we're doing to protect the drivers. I mean, it's, you know, it's going to be that way, and I think it's going to be, I mean, you've seen some of the news around the country. People are are experiencing the same thing you are. That's all I can think of to say at this
point. Yeah, I think that's a general consensus in the industry, is that, you know, people just aren't going to feel comfortable just piling on buses anytime soon. And, you know, I mean, you felt it even with only 12 or whatever, 15 people on a bus, you know, it still feel like, this is probably too close in this enclosed area. And I think people are feeling that all over the country. So.
Yeah. And just, I appreciate that, Tom and Mark. And I guess just to be clear, even with 11 people on the bus, not everyone is 6 feet apart from everybody else. I mean, I just wanted to, just so people know, I just want to say that bluntly, it's physically impossible. And we don't have sort of, you know, plexiglass dividers separating every row or something like that. This is a little bit of a hypothetical, and it feels a little bit, maybe a little less relevant when we have so few active cases here. But if we are in a situation where we didn't have, you know, we weren't as lucky as we are now, I just want people to have thought about that ahead of time. I encourage you to get on the bus now, especially while there are hardly any confirmed cases. So my second thing, really fast, and this is the last one, is just I will send this out to the board. This stuff popped up on my radar today, and that's why I haven't sent it. But I don't know. I'm sure Mark and AJ have seen this, maybe Tom as well. But there's been a little bit of a food fight with the CDC. It issued some guidance about a week ago, essentially saying, just drive a car. Don't get into any closed spaces. It didn't say explicitly don't take transit, but it basically was saying don't take transit. And I think it's important for all of us on the board to hear this. And there was a lot of pushback on this, because I think a lot of transit agencies said, hold on. Don't just tell everybody to drive a car. That could be disastrous. But I think it was very clear that the CDC was not thinking clearly about all of the implications of what it was saying. It was telling people to be careful. But be careful ended up getting translated largely as just drive. And we probably don't want that. A lot of communities would suffer a lot more than we would. But even here, I think we don't just want everybody getting into a car. But then we have to, as the board, we really have to think about what the major public messages are to make people feel safe if we are actually achieving a level of safety. With transit.
Thanks, Josh. We're a little over. I'm going to go to Stephen. I think he's got his hand up. Go ahead, Stephen.
Thanks, Carl. Josh, I think your point raises maybe an even more fundamental question for us, and that is how we deliver service in this COVID-19 era, and if 11 people or 12 people feel uncomfortable on a 40 or 60-foot bus, then how do we deliver service that's financially feasible? Maybe the whole idea of a 40-foot bus or a 60-foot bus has to be rethought. And that then potentially leads into the question of purchasing of buses maybe also should be cautiously approached.
Great. Thanks, Stephen. So I'm just conscious of the time. We kind of exceeded it by 15 minutes. So I just want to say, I think this is a good place to, I think, end off for today. We certainly can talk about this in an agenda item at a future regular board meeting. So thank you again, staff. And thank you to the public for those of you who attended. And thank you, board members, for being here today. Please stay safe and healthy. And we will see you all next week. So take care, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.